injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from The Nation and the Capital Times, it's Comrade John Nichols. Brother Nichols, how are
you? Well, it's intriguing times, my friend. You know, our president's keeping things busy out in Washington.
Well, before we get to him, let's sort of stay local. Lena Taylor, State Senator Lena Taylor, has been removed from the Joint Finance Committee by Minority Leader Jen Schilling, although technically it was Scott Fitzgerald that did it. And she's punching back. Here's the latest from WTMJ Television in Milwaukee.
Lena Taylor today publicly addressed a pair of controversies surrounding her allegations of bullying by a former employee and her citation for a public outburst at a downtown bank. Katie Crowther is live at Taylor's office in Glendale with the latest. Katie.
According to police reports, a request Taylor made at a Wells Fargo bank was denied. A police officer there and witnesses say she became aggressive, irate, and verbally attacked the bank teller. But today, Taylor defending her actions, saying what she called the bank teller was not a racial slur.
I'm set of the rush to judgment.
Lena Taylor stood in front of a group of supporters as she described what she said to a Wells Fargo employee last month. Witnesses told police she used a racial slur.
It's a difference between Negro, yeah. Negra, Ninja, and it's a difference between all of those. Right. And it's a difference between if you say it as a white man and if I say it.
So what does she say she told the bank employee?
That he was a house.
A word she says there's nothing wrong with.
Ezekiel Gillespie is my kind of Negro. Mm-hmm. I say it all the time.
Right.
I said it in the school and the kids was like, ooh. And I said, there is nothing wrong with that. If the gentleman in the bank was offended, I'm sorry he was offended. I, too, was offended that he would not follow the basic procedure.
Taylor says this is really a Wells Fargo customer service problem and criticizes MPD for ticketing her. Now, Taylor was cited for disorderly conduct. She says she plans to fight that citation. She also plans to fight her removal this week from the state legislators' Joint Finance Committee for allegedly bullying employees. She says that claim is completely unjustified.
So, she yesterday went on to say that LaTanya Johnson, another African-American woman, state senator from Milwaukee, who replaced her, Lena compared herself to Thurgood Marshall and compared LaTanya Johnson to Clarence Thomas.
Oof. There's a lot of stuff piling up here.
Yeah.
If I might begin on LaTanya Johnson.
Uh-huh. Who is?
LaTanya Johnson is a remarkably skilled and honorable political figure who didn't come up easy. She was a union president, involved in a lot of organizing, worked with, I think it was Local 502 over at AFSCME Local, which represents in-home daycare providers. So she was sort of in the forefront of a lot of really important organizing. She's got deep roots in the community. She came up via the Assembly and then into the Senate in 2016. I mean, and she's been very progressive in a lot of her stances and a lot of her votes. And so I think that's an unfair characterization of her at the deepest level. And frankly, you know, I think that for Senator Taylor at this point, I mean, whether people like her or not, she's been a very dynamic figure in the legislature. She's been somebody who has spoken out and stepped up in a lot of circumstances over the years. Doesn't mean people always agree with her. I understand that. But it strikes me that this is a point where it would be very wise to take a pause and recognize that you have a legal problem in Milwaukee as regards to the bank instance, which does not look good and which needs to be sorted out. And if she wants to go after Wells Fargo, boy, I love people going after Wells Fargo. But, you know, one of the most important lessons is that you don't go after the individual at the you know, the teller there. If you got a problem with a giant banking institution, go after the giant bank.
What do you think of the rationalization for her verbiage?
You know, I mean, that is her rationalization. And look, understand where this comes from. And if she wants to continue to play that out, you know, that's certainly her right. What I would counsel, though, in a situation like this is that, you know, when you're trying to make the case that your angry reaction, or what appears to have been an angry reaction to, you know, a conflict over cash in a check or something like that, it is somehow thought out, you know, that it's something that this is how I do it. This is the language I use. I don't think it works well in context. She's won a lot of elections. She may be right about that. But then when you put it in with this issue of the treatment of an employee and this issue with what she's saying about her colleague in the state Senate, it seems at this point as if the senator is trying to come up with an argument, an explanation for a lot of things happening at the same time. And I don't think it comes off well. I would argue that again, it's a good time for a pause. It's a good time to step back.
I have another quote here, and she says, "I do not apologize." Yeah. So I think she's made it clear where she's coming from. She's certainly rallying people around her. She was surrounded by activists from the community yesterday when she made these statements. Let me get to another local topic, so to speak.
Declaring the entire Foxconn site a blighted area. This move could make it easier for the village to take properties from unwilling sellers. Fox 6's Ben Handelman live in Mount Pleasant tonight, where a controversial vote was met with some very angry homeowners. Ben?
Mary, a vote on to determine if this would be a blighted area around Foxconn passed with ease. It could save the village millions of dollars. It could also make it easier for the village to obtain properties from unwilling sellers down the road. On their one-acre lot,
a lot of the work that we had done, we did ourselves in here, just save money.
Jim and Kim Mahoney of Mount Pleasant thought this would be the house they would retire in.
I said to my dad, I said, this would be nice. I said, I don't have to worry about any neighbors around here. I said, the closest one will be right there. Well, a few months later, we hear about Foxconn, so.
Just a year after moving in, they are now facing a tough question.
It's taking a toll. It is what it is.
What do you do when you don't want to sell?
In my opinion, all of my neighbors have settled for less than what they have now.
On a street once lined with 13 families.
There's only two of us that have not sold out yet.
The Mahoneys have not taken a village offer to sell at 140% of their home's appraised value to make way for the Foxconn manufacturing plant, where dirt is already moving. Wednesday, the village taking a step closer that may make it easier to obtain property from unwilling sellers. The village's Community Development Authority has designated the entire proposed Foxconn land a blighted area. The village says it allows them to save millions while borrowing money. It also paves the way for eminent domain, a process the village still calls a last resort.
There is no eminent domain proceeding currently underway.
Families like the Mahoneys say they don't consider themselves holdouts. After all, they never asked for this.
This is very stressful. It's stressful not knowing where you're going to live.
They're hoping a fair deal can be reached soon so they can restart their lives somewhere else.
Amazing story, isn't it, John?
It is an amazing story, and it's one of the more deeply troubling developments as regards the Foxconn project, which is a deeply troubling project on so many levels. I think the way to start thinking about Foxconn is this. From the start, the fix has been in, right? I mean, this is a project that local, state, and federal officials have determined that they want to do. And as such, they have put aside their duty to represent and serve and protect people who live in that area, and have attempted at every turn to roll over them. They have attempted to do so on issues of worker rights, right? I mean, this is, they're not respecting, you know, basic concepts as regards what the treatment of the workers in that plant should be. On issues of the environment, they are trying to rewrite all the rules. On issues of water and access to water, try to rewrite the rules in favor of the plant. On issues of farmland, some of the best farmland in Wisconsin, they want to tear it up. And on issues of, you know, kind of one of the classic concepts in the American experiment, which is that, you know, people do have, you know, some claim on their land, on their home. You know, that you live in a place, you've bought it, you've followed all the rules, and you've built a nice house, a good solid house. Although remember, even if it was a pretty beat up house, even if it was a house that maybe didn't have, you know, every screw screwed in, every, you know, board painted, you know, if it was a solid house that a person lived in, right, it qualifies for that basic standard, because not everybody's rich, not everybody's privileged. And for them to now come in here and say, well, you live in a blighted area.
Which is absurd.
You live in an area. It's an absurd construct, of course. I know the area very well. Remember, I grew up down there in the Union Grove area. My mother lives in Burlington. We drive through that area a lot, okay? And you know, my mother's old enough to remember very, very long ago when Bong Base was going to come down there. This was a Air Force base. Right. And she remembers what happened back then, where they were, you know, taking farmland all over the area and just kind of pulling it away from farmers. Farmers didn't want to give it up. It was good land, and they wanted to continue farming it. And she looks at driving through, you know, the Foxconn area, and she says, well, you know, Bomb Base never really came, did it, right? They took all the farmland. It took a lot of it. And then at the end of the day, it didn't happen.
Well, there's a, you know,
not in the way they'd expected.
There is a wide swatch of homes in Milwaukee in the late 1950s that were torn down to build a freeway. And then the freeway never came.
And you know, look, remember,
they destroyed neighborhoods.
They destroyed neighborhoods, but they also really, I think, created, you know, deeper divisions in a town that has a lot of divisions. And so it was, look, I just think what's going on here is incredibly bad choices, bad planning, bad priorities. And, you know, when you combine this with the, you know, just kind of like rolling over on environmental issues, what you really see here is a situation where Wisconsin officials, from Scott Walker on down, have abandoned their duty to their constituents in order to serve a Taiwanese company. And it is important to remember that there's still options for some of these folks. Some of them are, you know, potentially a judge might step up for them, and hopefully that would be the case. But also, it is important to note that an Illinois official, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, is now talking about stepping up to address the incredibly bad policies, incredibly bad choices that have been made as regards environmental standards in the area, because what's being done there is, of course, bad for the people that live there, right? But it is potentially very bad for people who live downwind.
Well,
know,
let's hope
live in Illinois.
Let's hope starting in January we have an Attorney General, Josh Call, who can be taking some aggressive steps in protecting the people of Wisconsin.
Well, I would hope. So I go a step further. I would hope that in January we have a governor and a legislature that chooses to reexamine this project. This project has clearly gone far beyond what the basic selling points were initially. And I think it is absolutely appropriate for the legislature to revisit a host of issues. You know, when this was being voted on in the legislature, slide, what was the amount of money they were talking about? Amount of money that
well
that
it was $3 billion. What are we up to now?
$4.5 billion.
Yeah,
I'm even hearing higher numbers.
Right. Yeah. And we've got local communities borrowing money to pay for stuff.
Huge amounts of money.
Absurd.
And so I would say when you've got a home project that's going on, right? You've contracted with somebody and they're going to build a house for you, right? And they were going to charge you, it's going to be a $100,000 project. It's now already a $150,000 project with lots of side borrowing and all sorts of other stuff going on. It's going to suggest you might even go to $200,000, i.e. doubling that. Wouldn't you at that point pull a pause with that contractor and say,
You would hope so. We'll take a break. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you. When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like S&R Remodeling, Madison Computer Works, and the Axley Law Firm. All right, this is sort of a local and national one. This is yesterday in Washington, D.C.
There are fewer homeowners and property owners.
As I said, I'm still getting used to this.
Even before the opening statements, it was clear Gina Haspel would face a tough hearing. Haspel tried to keep the focus on her three-decade career at the CIA, some of it spent undercover.
I excelled in finding and acquiring secret information that I obtained in brush passes, dead drops, or in meetings in dusty alleys of third-world capitals.
But it was her role in the post-9/11 enhanced interrogation program that has her nomination in question.
The very important thing to know about CIA is we follow the law. We followed the law then, and we follow the law now.
Haspel served at a so-called CIA black site where top-level al-Qaeda prisoners were subjected to harsh interrogation techniques like waterboarding, which simulates drowning. Those methods are now banned, but during the presidential campaign, candidate Trump advocated for their use.
Torture works, okay, folks? Torture, you know, I have these guys. Torture doesn't work. Believe me, it works, okay?
If this president asks you to do something that you find morally objectionable, will you carry that out, that option, and that order, or not?
Senator, that would be. My moral compass is strong. I would not allow CIA to undertake activity that I thought was immoral, even if it was technically legal.
Listen to her words.
Take activity that I thought was immoral, even if it was technically legal.
She wouldn't have the CIA take that up, but boy, she sure could outsource it, couldn't she?
Absolutely. And look, the important thing to understand is that you and I watch that hearing. I think most reasonable people watch that hearing and they see a politician. That's what she is. She's a politician, giving politician answers. And they're created to sound acceptable in this confirmation process. It's important to identify politicians as politicians, right? People who are, choosing their language. To be frank, not to be open about stuff, but to say the things that might get the votes they need, in this case, the votes of the committee and then the Senate as a whole. But it's interesting that when she was appearing, there was someone watching from afar, and that was Senator John McCain from Arizona. Senator McCain has experienced torture, has experienced, unimaginably difficult circumstances as a person who was a prisoner of war for a very long time. And also he's been somebody who's looked at these issues over many, many decades in many, many circumstances. After he watched the hearing, he communicated that he thought that she had effectively disqualified herself from the position because of her refusal to condemn torture in an effective way, and also because of her failure to in any kind of realistic way take responsibility for things that had happened in the past. And I'll rest my case with John McCain in this case. You know, John McCain has been, you know, he is certainly a huge supporter of the Pentagon. He's a huge supporter of a strong CIA. I don't think anybody's going to suggest for a moment that he is an all-in for, frankly, a lot of policies that I personally disagree with. And so if he sees this woman as 100%, you know, unacceptable, even somebody he says nice things about her service, he respects that she's been around, but ultimately says she's disqualified, it's unimaginable to me that the Senate would approve her.
Well, they're going to.
Yeah, I understand. It might need a little Mike Pence action there. Who knows how things finally sort out? Depends on, you know, what I think is really important on this is, you know, I was terribly disappointed in what Rand Paul did when he switched to support Mike Pompeo. You know, Rand Paul and Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, have tried to position themselves as defenders of the Constitution, and people really respect privacy rights, respect the rule of law in a host of different areas. There was a tremendous failure on the Pompeo nomination. It's going to be very, very interesting to look at where they line up, because frankly, that's a factor. And of course, also a factor is where Democrats line up, because remember, Pompeo was approved because Democrats went soft, and then Republicans who might have stood strong decided to give up the fight. The worst player on the Pompeo nomination was Heidi Heitkamp, the senator from North Dakota, who before Rand Paul and others backed off, announced that she was going to support the Pompeo nomination. Joe Manchin from West Virginia quickly came on board, and some others. And I just want to emphasize that this is there is bipartisan failure on some of these nominations, and this nominee could be stopped. This CIA nominee could be stopped if Democrats held firm and if Republicans who said their first duty is to the Constitution held firm.
All right, let's hit one more topic before we're done today. This is from CBS, the latest on your favorite attorney, Michael Cohen.
The money was paid to Essential Consultants LLC, the same company Michael Cohen used to pay adult film star Stormy Daniels not to speak about her alleged affair with President Trump. The transactions were first revealed in a document posted by Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenatti. They show payments of approximately $500,000 from Columbus Nova, the American investment firm tied to Russian billionaire Viktor Vekselberg, who has close ties to Vladimir Putin. In a statement, a lawyer for Columbus Nova described the money as a consulting fee and said that Vekselberg was not involved in the decision to hire Cohen.
I think that the receipt of the payments by the personal attorney to the president, Michael Cohen, is highly suspicious, may in fact show criminal conduct.
Avenatti says those crimes could include bank and wire fraud or money laundering. Cohen is under federal investigation, and last month, FBI agents raided his home and offices in New York. AT&T, Novartis, and Korea Aerospace have all confirmed they too paid Cohen for consulting services. A source at Novartis tells CBS News Cohen approached the company 18 months ago, promising that he could advise how to get access to the new administration.
Thus far, our investigation shows that there's substantial evidence that Michael Cohen was engaged in soliciting clients and selling access to the highest office in the land.
Just moments ago, Mr. Cohen asked a federal judge not to allow Mr. Avenatti to have anything to do with his ongoing case. He points to the fact that Mr. Avenatti has published Mr. Cohen's bank records and made several inaccurate statements about him. Mr. Cohen told the judge that he believes this is all part of an effort to prejudice his case.
Oh, my God. Can you believe this stuff?
It's surreal, I have to tell you. And, you know, one of the most important things to recognize in all this is that Avenatti, I mean, he's playing a fascinating game here.
He's my hero. He's my hero, by the way.
He is your hero. And boy, when his line of suits come out, you're going to be the first there to buy one. And but, you know, this is, people need to see this in context. This is what a good lawyer does. Now, lawyers operate on many, many levels, right? And cases will take them to many places. Some lawyers are never seen in public, and they were outside, you know, in the courtroom perhaps, but usually behind the scenes. But lawyers in high-profile cases like this often choose a dual track, one of focusing on the law and focusing on the legal filings, legal structures, which, by the way, Avenatti, by all accounts, has been very, very steady on, very, very focused on. So he's not just a hot dog like Giuliani out there, you know, making wild claims and stuff like that. He is focused on the legal part of this. But then he's also focused on a high-profile, very public, campaign. He refers to it as a cause. And there's a lot of history of lawyers doing this. And it's important. You know, what he's doing, the balance of the two, and his willingness to keep stepping up, there are risks in it, because you can get something wrong. You can be,
well, evidently,
picked at.
Evidently, where he got this information is the government flagged some of these transactions. And it looks like Michael Cohen is not denying the big ones, like 99% of them. The mud that Cohen's attorney yesterday was throwing up was a few very small ones, and it appears that might be another Michael Cohen. But they're not denying the AT&T. They're not denying the Russian oligarch. They're not denying the South Korean money. And the shifting rationalizations from these companies. Why doesn't anybody ever go to jail for this stuff?
I know. Well, here's another thing, too. You know, I've seen these people say, well, we all know this happens in Washington, right? You know, that doesn't make it legal or right to have a fixer taking money from corporations to influence a president. And whether that influence, you know, happened or how it happened or, you know, what the actual whole story on it. This is, I'm sorry, there's people saying, oh, well, we'll have to see what Mueller's got. No, this is something a United States Senate committee, oversight committee, as well as House, they should open hearings tomorrow on this. And if Paul Ryan's House of Representatives cannot muster an inquiry into the possibility that corporations were giving money to an associate of the President of the United States, not just a lawyer, an associate of the President of the United States, giving substantial amounts of money to get access, to get information, to get ideas. If they don't investigate the next steps in that, where that money went, what communications went forward, every aspect of that, with people under testimony, testifying before Congress, including the highest level people in the Trump administration, members of the Trump family and others, if they don't do that, then they are part of a cover-up. No matter what comes out, right? The failure of Paul Ryan's House of Representatives and Mitch McConnell's Senate to take that basic step of opening hearings on this immediately. Forget about the Mueller thing. That's a separate thing. Whatever comes of that, that's fine. But this stuff should be investigated because, Sly, AT&T had, as an example, had huge interests here. Mergers, the end of net neutrality. I mean, this is big, big deal stuff.
You know, it's hard for me to believe that Donald Trump would let a schlep like Michael Cohen get this rich off his presidency.
Well, with all due respect, there are people who say, and I don't know Trump that well, I'm not a Trump expert, but there are people who say that he doesn't like people making money off him.
Right.
Right? And if, in fact, he doesn't like people making money off him, and you've got a lawyer like Michael Cohen out there pulling in huge amounts of money, one part of the investigation, one part of the inquiry has to be, why did Trump, who apparently doesn't like people making money off him, accept that? Did he accept that?
Well, there's a whole other real interesting thing going on, and that is the inaugural committee and the Republican National Committee and Trump and that little slush fund.
With all due respect, that's every administration, that's something that real people ought to be very uncomfortable about.
As whenever somebody says something like you just said, I say scale. Everything is on a new scale.
No, and I think it's, you know, when we say every administration, I just don't like the inaugural committee structure.
Oh, I don't even like the inaugural
in general. Right. But
I went to one of those. I went to one of those inaugural balls one time. It was the most boring thing in the entire world. Horrible. Just horrible.
Well, You know, with all due respect, Thomas Jefferson was staying in a rooming house, walked over to you know, what was called the president's house at that point, or walked over, I'm sorry, the Capitol at that point, got sworn in, walked back, and had dinner at the rooming house. You know, I mean, it's, and Jefferson had many flaws as a person, but, you know, I think it's kind of gone downhill since then.
Amen, brother. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
You know, we work hard every day. In mills and mines, hospitals and schools, in office buildings, pharmacies and shipyards, factories and forests, in squad cars, ambulances and taxicabs. We do all kinds of jobs in Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and all across the United States and Canada. We build the things that build our country. We do things that keep our country going, support our families and our communities. We have the courage to stand up even when no one else does. We have the strength to fight for what's right, for our families and for yours. We're your friends, your neighbors, your sisters and brothers. We're more than 1 million members strong. We stand in solidarity with workers in every continent on the globe. We're the United Steelworkers Union, and every day we fight for you. Please join our fight. Visit usw.org or like us at facebook.com/steelworkers.